This is the San Diego Hotcast.
That's a hot one.
From the Padres Radio Network.
Shipley deals. Hunter hits one deep. Car rushed. Here he goes again. Lower deck, left field. Ball going, ball gone. Hunter Renfro, three home run day. Welcome back, kid. Good to see you. Fun to watch you.
Hey, gang, it's your Padre Radio podcast crew. That's RBI Rich over there, and I thought, you know, I got to come up with a Twitter handle name for my podcast. So I thought taking a look at a third strike Chris would be good. No. So, you know, like that?
I got one.
Worse?
Left on the what was the one that Ernie Harwell used to say? Standing there like the wind blew by us. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember when. Yeah, standing there on a street corner as the wind blew by.
Yeah.
Ernie Harwell. Okay, I'll be that guy. I'll be that guy. Hey, look, if you are a Fernando Tatis fan or a Luis Urias fan, and there are many of you, you're not going to be happy when I tell you who the starting infield is going to be for the Padres come opening day 2018. We will get to that. Is the bullpen cart idea already over before it begins?
No! Say it ain't so!
Rich, we will talk about that as well. But we will start with a question we talked about yesterday. And we owe you everybody an apology. I mean, look, we're not beyond doing that. We brought up a trivia question yesterday. No. And then we tried to come up with the answer to our own trivia question, and we didn't come up with the answer. So today we've got it for you, at least.
Wait a minute. Who's this we?
Listen, me.
I told you yesterday that was weak.
Me.
That was weak. You try to tell me it was a donut that didn't have a hole. That's a roll. I mean, that was just weak. The worst thing in the world anybody could ever do. Hey, I got a trivia question for you. You stump everybody, and then you don't even know the answer to your trivia question.
Yes, but anybody who listened to our podcast yesterday, all day and all night last night, they had a chance to think it through. And this morning, they woke up still thinking it through, and now we are going to finally put their mind at ease. But you know what? I want to congratulate you. See, you're going to put me down. I'm going to congratulate you. Because when we were kicking it around yesterday, you actually came up with two of the three guys. That was the correct answer. And the question was, name the three pitchers who have made 10 or more opening day starts since the year 2000. And the question was brought up because Justin Verlander this year will start for Houston on opening day. That will be his 10th opening day start. So he will become the fourth pitcher in this exclusive club. You came up with two of them, though, just kicking names around. Roy Halladay, Doc Halladay, and King Felix Hernandez. So I'm very proud of you for coming up with two out of three, but you did not get the leader in this category.
Wow. I'll take that. If I hit 750 for the day, if I go 3 for 4, that's one where I might win the player of the game stake after the game.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. But here's the answers that you've been waiting for now. We've given you Verlander's going to be making number 10. Felix Hernandez has made 10. Doc Halladay made 10, rest in peace. But the guy who's made more opening day starts since the year 2000 than any other pitcher in Major League Baseball, and now all of you can stun your friends with this knowledge, is CC Sabathia. CC Sabathia, he's made 11 opening day starts since the year 2000. So, and I don't know how many different teams he's done that with.
It will be Cleveland, Milwaukee, and the Yankees. Am I missing anybody?
No. I think you got them all. I thought you might leave Milwaukee out, but you didn't. You were right. But did he make an opening day start for Milwaukee, or was he just a rental at the end of the season?
I think it was a rental at the end of the season.
Yeah. So I think his starts were for Cleveland and the Yankees. But CC is number 1-1 in that category. Is Tyson Ross going to be number 2-2 in that category? Is he going to get his second opening day start in 3 years? I think a lot's going to depend on how he does today. While we're talking, he's got 3 innings against the Giants in this spring training game.
It's certainly a fight to see who's going to get those 1-2 spots left open, because we know that Perdomo's got one, or actually Lamet's got one, Perdomo's got one, Clayton Richards got one. Brian Mitchell, by reason of him not having any options, is going to have the fourth. So is it Tyson Ross that's going to come in there? And wouldn't it be amazing if Tyson Ross makes it and he leapfrogs to the front to be the opening day starter, knowing that he's fighting for that fifth position? And because you don't have an ace and the rotation's pretty flat as far as talent level, everybody's just about the same. So it's not like I got an ace and I got a week number 5. I've got guys that are all basically at the same level. None of them the ace of Clayton Kershaw, and that's not an insult. That just tells you how good Clayton Kershaw is, that he makes that fifth spot in the rotation. It might be the number one spot in the rotation because the depth of the San Diego Padres minor leaguers hasn't gotten here to the big leagues yet in the pitching department.
Yeah, that would really be a story. Tyson Ross, opening day starter 2016, basically out of baseball. I mean, he was with the Texas organization, but basically out of baseball in 2017. Could be opening day starter again in 2018. That's not what Andy Green has said. That's what we are surmising and talking about. But it makes a little sense. He's got some experience in that department. We had some fun talking about Johnny LeMaster. And there's no way to segue into Johnny LeMaster. But if you don't know who Johnny LeMaster is, he was a shortstop, a weak hitting shortstop for the San Francisco Giants back in the 1980s mostly. And the Giants were bad in those days. And when they lost, the fans really would get on Johnny LeMaster and they would boo him unmercifully. Johnny LeMaster did one of the great things of all time. Instead of put the name LeMaster on the back of his uniform one night, he put the name Boo. He figured if everyone's going to boo him every time he comes up, he might as well at least identify with the jersey name. And you can find pictures of that on YouTube or just Google it. But it's pretty funny, Johnny LeMaster doing Boo. But you took that and gave us a story as to how the long pants started in Major League Baseball. And I think it's important that we understand this because nowadays, very few guys wear their pants up to show the socks. Everybody wears their pants. And Will Myers, I mean, his pants, doesn't he almost hook it on the end of the back of his cleat? I mean, it's so, his pants, he wears them so long. But none of this would have ever happened if it weren't for
George Hendrick,
George Hendrick.
So the story goes.
And George Hendrick had some time with the Padres, too.
So the story goes, and he doesn't talk to the media. That's why this isn't a well-known story. His rookie year, they asked him a question. They kind of misquoted him, took it out of context, embarrassed him. He goes, I'm never going to talk to the writers again. So he doesn't tell the story. That's why this is not a very well-known story. So for George, coming through the minor leagues, you remember back in the day, you could find the pictures online of Tony Gwynn playing for the Las Vegas
Padres.
Not the 51s, not the this or that.
Stars.
Right. So every team would just take their big league uniforms, send it to AAA. And those AAA uniforms from that year would get sent to AA and on down the line. So Cuz is first coming up. He's lowest level of the minor leagues. He's wearing uniform pants that are probably 10 years hand-me-down, right?
Didn't fit too well.
Now, and if anybody knows what hand-me-downs are like, you know, they're hand-me-down for a reason and they're already worn out. So by the time he got him, the elastic on the bottom, which he used to hold the pants up, had completely evaporated. So he was a tall guy. He was fast. He could run. He'd hit a double, pulling into second base, trying to slide, and his pant legs are falling down, tripping over himself. So he said, if I ever get to the big leagues, I'm going to wear my pants down. So he gets to the big leagues, establishes himself, and one day he goes, this is it, pulls the pants leg down. Not all the way down to the ankle like Will wears them, but just kind of halfway down. Everybody freaked out. This is at the same time as the Olympics are going on in Mexico, 1968, I believe.
Yeah, and those guys are raising their fists in the air, black power. Yeah. And really, guys weren't allowed to express themselves back in those days. And George Hendrick was kind of one of the first to do it.
So he pulls his pants down. Now, he doesn't talk to the media, so all of a sudden people are freaking out.
He pulls his pants legs down, not his pants down. Steve Lyons.
that's psycho, which I still think he did on purpose. The pant legs start falling down. He leaves them down. And all of a sudden people are freaking out because they're thinking he's making a political statement, which he was not. But he didn't talk to anybody, so all the speculation of people running amok, he wears them down. Commissioner sends him a telegraph. You're being fined so-and-so for being out of uniform.
Did he send the telegraph in Morse code? It wasn't that long ago, was it?
Yeah, it was a telegram. It was a telegram. I've sent telegrams. Have you ever sent a telegram?
I have no idea. Sorry.
I actually have sent a telegram to people way, way, way back in the day. So he gets the telegram, sends the check. Next week, gets another telegram. So now he decides two things. He sends a telegram back to the commissioner, Bowie Kuhn, and says, go ahead and tell me how much it's going to be for the season because I ain't raising my pants up. I'm not fixing my pant legs. I'm wearing like this. And then he got two pairs of pants, cut the bottoms off one, sewed it on to the bottom of the other, so now they really went down to his ankles. So everybody's freaking out. that, you know, he's desecrating the game.
He's the only guy in baseball doing this.
Only guy in baseball doing this. So he's playing against, I think it's probably
– Cincinnati. He was still Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati. So later in his career,
yeah,
he's against Cincinnati and comes to first base, and Pete Rose is there. Pete goes, "Cuz, I like your style." And he goes, "Oh, man, that's great." He goes, "Can I wear the pants like you last year?" He goes, "Pete, you're the best hitter in the game. You can wear pants anywhere you want." Pete was the second. After Pete did it, everybody else in baseball did. And by the way, when he sent that telegram, or telegraph, whatever it was, to Bowie Kuhn saying how much would be for the season, commissioner sent him a telegram back and said, "Forget it."
That's nice of Bowie Kuhn to do. You know, there's a story that goes along with that in the NBA. Derek Coleman, who was kind of a bad boy back in the day, went to Syracuse, New Jersey Nets, high draft choice, but never really lived up to his potential. But the NBA put a dress code in, and they said, you got to wear a suit to every game, and a suit on the bench if you're not playing, and a suit when you leave the arena. They wanted their guys to look sharp. Derek Coleman said, I'm not wearing any suit. So the NBA fined him. Derek Coleman sent a message back to the NBA, said, just tell me how much it's going to be for the rest of the season because I'm not going to be wearing a suit. And that endeared Derek Coleman to all of his fans. But so George Hendrick wasn't the first guy to have that situation. But now you know why a lot of guys in Major League Baseball are running around with the long pants.
Do you like the pants up or do you like them bloused? Do you like them bloused up or do you like them falling down?
What do you think?
You're going to say down.
No, I'm not.
Really?
I love them up. I want to see the socks. The socks are there for a reason. I love baseball socks. I love it when – is it Brad Hand that wears them way up still, just under the knee?
Yeah.
I mean, see, that to me is just – that's the way it was supposed to be done originally. That's the way it should still be done now. I'm old school on that.
So I've got a 17-year-old. I'll talk about him every once in a while. He's still playing baseball. Hanging on as long as he can. They're not going to let him rip the uniform off of him. So we, by the way, if anybody has a summer travel team, I need one for a 17-year-old. Help me out here. We live up in North County, but we'll go anywhere. Ever since he was a little kid, T-ball, I made him wear his pants up. I made him blouse the pants, made him pull them all the way up. I used to make him wear stirrups in Little League. And to this day, he knows that he can't wear the pants down. He has to wear them. But now they're actually making, Chris, they're bloomers. They're cut short. They're baggy, so they look like the old Brooklyn Dodger uniforms.
Right. So they're trying to combine it. I think Major League Baseball would like to see these guys bring the pant legs up a little bit, just in general, and well, show more sock.
Okay. You
show a little more sock, guys. Come on.
You want to know why they do?
Why?
Because stance is now the official sock of Major League Baseball.
Oh, and we got to get that in.
Yeah, exactly. You could buy them at Petco Park in the gift shop. You can find the same sock that the Padres wore. You saw them wearing the different kind of socks, kind of goofy, wacky socks during the All-Star game. I've got a couple pairs. I got a pair of Tony Gwynn stance socks that I wear.
Nice. You don't have them on right now, though.
No.
I had a guy tell me once, and this is an old football friend of mine. He said, your best ability as an athlete is your availability. And I always thought that was a great line. And basically what it means, if you're hurt, you can't play, you can't do anything. And this gets us talking a little bit about Alex Dickerson. I feel bad for this guy, this outfielder, tons of talent. Padres love him. 2014, missed most of the season. 2017, missed almost all – did actually missed the entire season last year with a bad back. Now he's got an elbow injury. Andy Green says he's not going to be ready for opening day. The only thing that helps does is clear up the outfield picture a little tiny bit, but you don't want to take Alex Dickerson off of this mix. I mean, this is a guy that I know the Padres feel has a future somewhere.
So the short time that we've worked together, you know I'm a pretty positive guy, right? I walk around with a big smile on my face, always looking for the positive. The positive spin on this is it's going to give more opportunities for Frenchie Cordero and Perella and Renfro and Jankowski and everybody else that's trying to make this ball club because those at-bats will be given to those guys. So Andy will get more opportunities to see more players. The bad thing is, and I talked to Alex during FanFest, that you know he worked his butt off to get back to the situation after the back surgery. I remember two distinct things with Andy Green. When he announced that Dickerson was lost for the year, I told him this. I said, look, you look like you are visibly shaken because you're counting on this guy so much because you believed in him. And then we talked about that again at FanFest, and he was excited to have Dickerson back into the fold. So I just feel for the guy. Hope and pray for him that he can get through this thing. He just seems snake bitten.
Yeah, he's definitely snake-bitten right now, and he's not going to be ready to start the season. We'll keep an eye on that. You would think it would take several injuries during the course of the year for Alex Dickerson to get a chance in 2018 because you've got so many guys that have now gone ahead of him, including Perella, including Renfro, who's already there, Myers in the outfield now. And my new personal favorite, wasn't really planning on talking about Franchi today, but Franchi Cordero, I did not realize this guy almost went 20-20-20 last year in the minor leagues. And I'm talking about 20 doubles, 20 triples, 20 home runs. Hey, I think he missed by a couple in one of the two categories, but or one of the three categories. But Andy Green said, anybody that goes 20-20-20's got my eye. And he's slugging at the big league level as well when he makes contact. That's his only little bugaboo right now, as he strikes out a little bit too much. But when he hits the ball, he hits it hard.
I think the addition of Franchi Cordero makes this ball club, they're starting to get enough critical mass that we could start talking about the window of opportunity to open. So I always tell people, you have to have enough oars in the water in order for you to have a good baseball club. So a year ago, 2 years ago, was if Will Myers can have a great season, the Padres have an opportunity to play great baseball. Now this year, you have oars. If Will Myers or Hunter Renfro or Eric Hosmer or Jose Perella or Franchi Cordero, that means you have enough depth, and they have enough oars in the water that they can start going places.
Yeah, they got a lot of guys that if they don't need one guy to have a good year. They have a bunch of possibilities. All right, let's go to the other side of the ball, because you know what? Most of this spring training, really, the talk has been about the Padres' offense. I wrote a blog the other day about the machine and the way these guys are scoring runs. But we know that preventing runs is a big deal as well. And as much as we've all fallen in love with Fernando Tatis Jr., as much as we've all fallen in love with Luis Urias, I do not think either of those two guys, A, is going to be on the big league ball club. I think they're both going to get sent down. But opening day infield for the Padres, here's what I think it's going to look like March 29th against the Milwaukee Brewers. You're going to see Eric Hosmer, obviously, at first base. You're going to see Carlos Asuaje at second. You're going to see Freddy Galvis at short. And you are going to see Chase Headley at third. And a lot of people are going to bark about this. They're going to say, what about these young kids that you're talking about? Why aren't they there? The reason, Andy Green loves the sound of that infield because of the defense it can play.
You have to have defense if you're going to contend, if you're the San Diego Padres. If you want to be a 500 ball club, you better have defense. How many times last year do we see guys not getting the balls that are hit to the shortstop? I've loved Eric Ibar, but he didn't have the range that you need when you have ground ball pitchers like Perdomo and Clayton Richards. So for the Padres, they've increased their run productivity, but the flip side of that in this day of analytics is you also have to decrease the runs allowed. The differential between the two is big, so preventing runs is just as important as scoring runs if you look at the grand scheme of things going back to Moneyball. And it's laid out in Michael Lewis's book very, very well, a little bit in the movie. But if you've got a guy named Chris Sello,
or Scott Hatterberg, let's say. Didn't Scott Hatterberg write Moneyball? He should have, because nobody could have ever made him look any better.
One of these days we'll do a podcast on all the factually incorrect things about Moneyball. Ron Washington said he never went to Scott Hatterberg's house. I will tell you that it was Billy yelling at Art Howe more than Art Howe yelling at Billy.
The movie.
All right, so let me go on for a little tangent here. So a really good friend of mine was the video coordinator in Oakland at the time. Now he's the assistant general manager, I think, of the Oakland A's. Went back, and I worked with him in Tampa Bay. But he goes, he said Billy called him down into the clubhouse, and he had a little office off to the side where they had the video room. And he walked in, and there's Brad Pitt. And he goes, dude, Brad Pitt was sitting in my chair because he hung around with the A's just trying to figure out what being in the clubhouse was like. So anyway, back to this run differential. How many runs can I score? How many can I prevent? Run prevention is just as big in the analytics of baseball today as anything else. So the old adage was I have to have great defense up the middle, catcher, shortstop, second baseman, center field. If I've got a good spine of defense up the middle, we can win. Now you look at this ball club, they're going to be able to turn double plays with the best of them. They did great last year. They'll do better this year, and they'll be able to pick up any ball hit in that infield to help Perdomo, help Clayton Richard, and help the ball club. Question, is the guy that I didn't think was going to come to spring training with the Padres, and Chase Headley going to be your everyday third baseman, and what will the expectations for the Padre fans be? Will it be the Chase Headley that was here before or the Chase Headley that we have 2018?
I think Chase Headley has, going back to Johnny LeMaster for a second and trying to tie this together a little bit, I think Chase Headley has the best chance of being Chase Boo. And that's because Padre fans remember what he's capable of doing. He was a number one draft choice, didn't really pan out, then had the monster year, then went to New York for a while. Now he's back. Now he's taking a spot that I think a lot of Padre fans would like to see go to Villanueva or go to Asuaje or go to Spangenberg or go to, you know, one of these young guys. So Headley's going to have to produce in April, or he's going to be Chase Boo, I think. And that's just part of the pressure of being a big league athlete and making $13 million.
He makes that.
I feel for him.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of pressure on him, and this is at the crossroads of his career. What has he become? The other part, let me go back to the run differential. So if Chris Ello is a young stud hitter coming up, right, he's just tearing the cover off the ball, and your WAR is about 3.5. You're good. You, by having you on the ball club, you will help us win 3.5 more games than the average major leaguer offensively. But your defense is atrocious, Chris. You can't catch a fly ball. You couldn't do anything on the defense. You just fall over yourself.
I can catch a cold.
That guy's so bad he couldn't even catch a cold. And your defense is so bad that you actually cost your ball club five wins a year. Your net is your liability. So for all these guys that are out there, yeah, do I hit the cover off the ball? Maybe not, but I can prevent enough. So my plus minuses, mm-hmm. I belong in the lineup.
Well, I think here's a good way of also looking at it. Let's just look at shortstop for a second. Freddy Galvis versus Fernando Tatis Jr. Let's say at this point, Freddy Galvis, who's a proven everyday shortstop in the major leagues, is 25% better defensively than Fernando Tatis Jr. just because he's been around longer, he's got more experience. This kid has tons of talent, but still needs some more seasoning, et cetera, defensively. That means that Fernando Tatis, were he playing shortstop, would have to hit at least 25% better than Freddy Galvis hits to make up for the defensive part of it. And I think that's what we're talking about here, and I think that's what Andy Green's thinking about.
And again, every team writes their own algorithm. They have computer programmers to sit there, put all this stuff in, and some people will emphasize defense, some people emphasize hitting, some people emphasize walks versus strikeouts. But yeah, you're absolutely right. He has to be better overall than the other guy. And then for Freddy Galvis, I think Padre fans, let me ask you this. Padre fans, there's a couple things. You want to start a conversation with a Padre fan that's going to get heated? Two things. Ask them, how come the Padres can never find a shortstop, and should they wear the brown uniforms? Those are the two things. I can walk up to any Padre fan, and it's a half-hour conversation. Padre fans are so desperate to have an everyday shortstop because they haven't had one in so long.
Khalil Green was the last one, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't had one for so long. You haven't had one that you could sit there for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
And with all due respect, nobody appreciated Khalil Green when he was here, but they appreciate him now because he was a solid everyday shortstop for 5 years at the time.
Exactly. So they want a short. People here at San Diego want a shortstop so bad that they are just waiting there to Tatis get here and just be here for the next 10 years. You got to be patient. You're going to like Freddy Galvis an awful lot. And then the nice thing is if Galvis has this one-year deal, and he stays, you could also move him around to play a little bit of the other infield positions, and you get more oars in the water.
All right. That's a look at the Padres' infield defense. I think the outfield defense is going to be so much better now.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm calling you out, Chris.
What are you calling me out on?
Well, because yesterday you were weak with the podcast trivia question that you didn't know the answer to. You said that you were going to give me the starting four in the infield.
I did. I already gave it to you.
All right.
Hosmer, Asuaje, Galvis, and Headley. That's going to be the opening day starting four. I'm not necessarily agreeing with it. I think that's what it's going to be, though.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, on opening day, what's Jose Perella doing?
Jose Perella is going to be, my goodness, I think he's going to be first guy off the bench. I don't think he's going to start. I think some people have him factored in as the opening day left fielder. He could be because Milwaukee will probably go with Chase Anderson, who's a left-hander, but I think that Andy Green's going to want to get the bat of Hunter Renfroe in on opening day because he mashes lefties. And I think you'll see Renfroe in left, and you'll see Margot in center, and you'll see Myers in right, and Perella will start the season on the bench.
Okay. That's better than yesterday where you brought that weak stuff where you ask a trivia question and don't know the answer.
I'm never going to live that down, I have a feeling, with Mr. RBI Rich here. But that's fair enough. It's fair enough. Speaking of Manuel Margot and defense, do you buy the story that Willie Mays was so good in center field and so fast and had so much anticipation that Willie Mays once, as a center fielder, caught a foul ball? Do you believe that's true, or do you believe that's a tall tale?
I read Willie Mays' biography a couple of years ago. I'm going to say it's true. Okay, you know why? You want to know why I'm going to say it's true?
Okay, why?
Two things is, I know I've spoken to a lot of people that played with and against and managed the Say Hey Kid. If you see Willie Mays at the ballpark, he has a body man that's with him, like the president has a body man. And the body man that he had for the longest time liked me. So other people would walk up, and Willie would just keep his head down. Because here's the thing about Willie Mays. No, everybody wants something from him. Even if you walk up to tell him how great he is, you want something. You want him to hear you tell him how great he is. You want to tell him a story about what your dad said about him or your grandfather said about him. Nobody just walks up to Willie and it doesn't want something, right? So you have to be protective because if not, people are just taking from him all the time. So the body man that he had liked me. So if you walked up and the body man said, go away, Willie wouldn't even look up. If the body man said, hey, Willie's a good guy, Willie would open up and he would be gregarious with you. He'd be a very, very nice man with you. So luckily for me, the body man liked me, so I got a chance to talk to Willie Mays a little bit. Not saying we're friends, but I've got to spend time with him.
Still pretty sweet.
It's like I was in Oakland one day. They were the first pitch was coming out, and I heard the announcer, now throwing out the first pitch, Dominic DiMaggio. And I'm like, did he say Dom DiMaggio? And they said, yeah. And I, holy crap. And I ran out of the press box, ran down to the clubhouse, grabbed a baseball, stood there dumbfounded, couldn't say anything, holding it with my hand shaking. Mr. DiMaggio, will you sign a baseball for me? I mean, to get to see greatness like that. So anyway, the reason I think it's true is because the winds were so tricky in San Francisco that he probably went chasing one in the gap, and it took him all the way over to the left field line or right field line.
And he caught one in foul territory. I'd never seen it. I don't think anybody's ever seen anyone actually do it. If Willie Mays did it, I believe it. But maybe Manuel Margot's fast enough to do it someday. And especially the way Andy Green plays his outfield and infield. He shades guys with, you know, the big-time shifts. You get a number eight hitter up there who's swinging late on a fastball, and Manuel Margot's playing in, you know, right center field, almost right field. Maybe one day we'll see him catch a foul ball. Huh? How about that?
Where would be the windiest ballpark where that would happen?
Because the right fielder would have to totally misplay the ball or not see the ball for the center fielder to pass him right. And go catch the ball.
So maybe it's Wrigley Field with the hawk blowing in, the wind blowing in, and it kind of blows funky and it takes him past Will in left field.
Will Myers is just having a bad day and he just can't find the ball. And Manuel Margot has to go over and save him.
And Margot's jumping up on the brick wall, taking it from Steve Bartman.
That'd be awesome. All right, you know what else would be awesome is if they brought in the relievers and the bullpen cart.
Yes!
And we talked about this yesterday, but this idea may die before it gets started. My goodness, some of the Padre relievers were asked about it yesterday upon the news that the Arizona Diamondbacks are going to bring back the bullpen cart and caddy in their players in a golf cart with the Arizona hat and helmet on top with a bunch of advertising now. But our first reaction was, yes. Padres need to be the second team to get one of these things. Craig Stammen, I'm not calling him out, but he was the one quoted today, so I will mention. He said, look, I'm used to getting my game face on when I run in from the bullpen or jog in from the bullpen. I don't know that I would have the same success coming in a golf cart. So that's the other side of this coin. And the Padres say, look, we like the idea, but we have a whole lot of other things that we have to deal with. And they'd have to find a place to park the bullpen cart out in center field, and they'd have to create some space. So anyway, this is not an idea that's going to be happening next week for the Padres. Anyway, we know that.
Oh, I hope it happens. You know,
I know.
The thing is that, first of all, anybody who plays Major League Baseball has never experienced that and never seen it with their own eyes on a Major League Baseball field today, of the bullpen cart and how cool it was, because when you were a little kid, you thought maybe they'd give you a ride to your car after the game and you'd meet your dad over there. Hey, Dad, look, I'm in the bullpen cart. So that's number one. Number two is all these players have so much mental coaching that they learn how to focus and refocus as the game goes on. So Stammen's absolutely right. That's where he's learned. Working with somebody on the mental side, I focus as I walk in. I start walking through the hitters that I'm going to see. You know, some guys run like crazy. You remember Craig Lefferts running in from the outfield
to run past the mound. He couldn't stop in time.
I've talked to some relievers that would do that and run, and they said it was to get their heart pumping and get a lather going and get them fired up, ready to go.
By the way, it makes me think of the greatest entrance ever made by a major league reliever. Remember Heath Bell in the All-Star game when he came racing in and slid into the mound to get ready to pitch? That was making a statement, but no one's ever beat that one.
So I've talked to Ken Revisa, who's the best sports psychologist in all of baseball. He's working with the Chicago Cubs now. He said, I asked him because of the length of games, that I thought that all these rituals they go through to mentally focus is dragging the game along, and it's one of the things the commissioners talked about. He said they just do that because that's the pace. You can always readjust it for them to take less time to prepare. So I think if you find the cart, maybe put a video in there, and it's you know, Craig's 10 greatest appearances. And
pumps Craig up. The music that he likes is just blasting in the bullpen cart.
And I think that there is a way that you could tie that into your mental preparedness for the game.
I think you can also put a little some little jet engines on the cart behind, blow out a little fire like the old Batman car. Make it really look cool now. Let's update the bullpen cart. Well, hopefully the Padres will get the bullpen cart. I wrote a blog today, real quick, as we wrap this thing up, about Dick Enberg. They're going to have a tribute to Dick, celebration of life this weekend at Petco Park. I know a lot of Padre fans are going to attend. Sadly, we're having too many of these celebrations of life, but hope you'll check out the blog today. Hope you'll pay some more honor to the great Dick Enberg, because we're going to miss him this year.
Absolutely. Did you get a chance to spend much time with him?
I really didn't, and I really wanted to, because I grew up in L.A., when he was doing the Angels, the Rams, and UCLA basketball, and that's what I wrote about today. But so he was a hero of mine, without question. But when he got to San Diego, I wasn't in really much of a position to see him. I wish I had.
I would see him probably 3 or 4 times during the homestand at the ballpark, and I would, you know, he's sitting there with his friends, he's eating dinner, he's sitting behind us in the press box, and I wanted so much to go up, because it's like meeting your idol. In our business, it's like meeting your idol. It's like meeting Willie Mays in what we do. And I wanted to go talk to him so bad. And I just said, I don't want to walk up. excuse me, Mr. Enberg, my name's Rich, and I've always wanted to meet you because, you know, you're one of the greatest of all. You know, you don't want to do that, right? You don't want to embarrass yourself, and you don't want him to look at you like you're an idiot.
You should have gone up to him and asked him, hey, Dick, did you ever play center field and catch a foul ball like Willie Mays did, my other hero? See, that would have kind of thrown him off, and he might have responded to you. He might have told you to get lost. I'm not sure.
So I didn't do it. I wanted to so bad. And like, I had family visiting, like, that's Dick Enberg. Can we go talk to him? Like, I don't know him. I don't know. I just can't. I can't walk up. I don't want to bother the man. He is the one of the greatest announcers of all time. So one day we're sitting in the dugout before the game, and I think it's Pomerantz. Tony Gwynn Jr. might have been there. I think Jesse was there for a minute. A couple guys. We're just hanging out after batting practice got started, and we're just sitting there talking about whatever. And he walks up, and the TV guys say hi to him. Hey, how you doing? And he looks over at me and he goes, hi, I'm Dick Enberg. I'm like, hi, I'm Rich Herrera.
You're who? What was that name again? Sorry.
Hi, my name's Rich.
Yeah.
And he goes.
So he introduced himself to you.
Yeah, and he was so gracious and so nice. And we talked about the team, and we talked a little bit about broadcasting. He talked about the radio shows that we were doing. I'm like, it's one of those moments like, oh, my God, I'm standing here with Dick Enberg. I am talking to Dick Enberg. this is something that, you know, I ran back and wanted to tell everybody. I met Dick Enberg. I wish I would have taken a selfie, but I couldn't bring myself to ask him, can I have a selfie with you? But the fact that I got to stand there and have five quality minutes talking to him is something that, you know, goes into my diary.
Goes into the history books, as does this radio podcast with Chris and Rich on the Padres Radio Network.
This is the Padres Radio Network. Like and follow us on Facebook.com/Padres Radio. Sign up for our newsletter on PadresRadio.com.